Good morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Today is Monday, February 16th, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, news and commentary in less time than it takes to be normal. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Peace activist Michelle Dahr and her supporters are up against increasing police harassment at Camp Homebound in Salem.
Coos Bay anti-LNG activists want the terminal's developers to come clean about the plant's air pollution potential.
And you can kiss your fish goodbye. No spring Chinook fishing season this year on the Deschutes River.
Portland area weather, partly cloudy with a chance of showers later, highs around 50. And then tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and lows in the 30s. Tomorrow, more of the same.
And first we go to regional news, not recorded last night. Again, last night in Salem, and indeed since Friday, Michelle Dahr and her supporters at Camp Homebound have been subject to petty harassment on the part of previously friendly local law enforcement. Michelle Dahr has been fasting and maintaining a 24-hour vigil on the steps of the Oregon State Capitol, bringing awareness to the massive upcoming deployment of the Oregon National Guard. Michelle is joining us this morning by phone from Seattle to tell listeners what's been going on down there. Good morning, Michelle. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, good morning, Chris.
So it hasn't been easy lately, has it?
Well, no. For the last week, we've been just encountering some, harassment from the Oregon State Police, who we've been previously getting along quite well with. We hadn't had any incidents since November 1st. And then a little over a week ago, as per the instruction that they had given us to remove our sleeping bags during the day, we do that. We walk them two blocks up the street and leave them at somebody's house and then come back. Well, in that brief period of time that we took to do that, they dismantled and destroyed the vigil. And so we got it back up and running within a day. And then yesterday again, over the course of the week, we established what our boundaries were, and they said, well, somebody always had to be right there. And we asked, well, what about bathroom breaks? If there's just one vigiler, are they allowed to at least go and use the bathroom or take the dog to the bathroom? One of our vigilers has a service animal. And so yesterday, they said that was fine, no problem, as long as we were, within, eyesight and they could see us. Well, Greg was walking the dog yesterday to go to the bathroom right across the street. He was right there, but he didn't notice. I guess he had his back turned, and they took everything down again and destroyed everything. Well, they haven't destroyed everything as far as we know. They did say we could come, and if we could describe absolutely everything we had up there, then they would return it to us. And we can't do that until tomorrow morning because today is President's Day and everything's closed, but so we're working on putting together some more supplies, another sign, just in case we can't get everything back out of impound, although we're hoping we can.
Michelle, tell us, if you can, we've got just a few more seconds left, but can you tell us what we can do to support your efforts in the vigil here, in Portland? What can listeners do?
Well, from Portland, anything helps, calls of support, anything, people feel called to do, if they could possibly come down and offer support, that's always good. I really appreciate all of the support we've been getting and all of the ways in which people have been, helping us out. And so we could always use vigil support. Night support is great. Cameras are really good. We have joeanybody.com, I think is his site up, and he's got some YouTube videos, four of them now. There's soon to be five of the vigil and what we're doing and what we did on Saturday at the sesquicentennial celebration, which was quite exciting. I got to speak to the governor a couple more times, in person. So he's got all that. So if you go Google Joe Anybody and go to Camp Homebound's page on his site, then you can look at those videos. And there's also documentation of the police presence at night and what they've been doing. They've been citing everybody. Although anybody who's been cited is represented by the ACLU in a lawsuit that we have to address this harassment.
Thank you so much, Michelle. That was Michelle Dahr of Code Pink Covella speaking to us from Camp Homebound on the steps of the state capitol in Salem. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you, Chris.
Oregon's share of the economic recovery package is worth $1.78 billion when tax cuts and other benefits are considered. This is less than expectations, largely due to pressure from Republicans. The infrastructure portion of the package will mean about $454 million. Not a whole lot once you take the project manager's cut. The package also includes the reduction of fuels in the forest, which means logging.
That was a quote, a reduction of fuels in the forest, which is exactly what Liam translated as cutting down the trees. Democratic Representatives Peter DeFazio of Oregon and Walter Minnick of Idaho voted no on Friday as Congress passed President Barack Obama's stimulus package. They were among just seven Democrats who voted against the plan. Minnick opposed the stimulus measure last month, but DeFazio switched his vote. He was the only member of Congress to oppose the bill after supporting the initial version. DeFazio's problem? Too many tax cuts for the wealthy, I'm guessing.
In the coming budget, Multnomah County could lose a greater percentage of its workforce than in the past 8 years combined. Rather than wait for the inevitable, the county government's biggest union has made an unprecedented move. It asked members outside of a bargaining year what they'd give up to save jobs.
The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife says there will be no spring Chinook fishing season on the Deschutes River this year. According to biologist Rod French of the State Fish and Wildlife Department, fewer than 400 wild Chinook are expected to return to the Warm Springs River to spawn. The predicted run must be at least 1,000 fish before state managers open a sport fishery on the hatchery. I guess if the fish took up golf around central Oregon, they'd find enough water to make it back upstream.
Efforts to clean up one of the West's most enduring and dangerous legacies should get a boost from the stimulus bill. Tens of thousands of abandoned hard rock mines are contaminated with cyanide-infused leach ponds and tons of rubble that sends selenium-laced runoff into the streams. The final bill contains more than $1.5 billion for construction and maintenance projects in the BLM, the National Park Service, and the Forest Service. But what about the ecological disasters that are caused by the BLM, the National Park Service, and the Forest Service?
Exactly. In Coos Bay, residents are concerned that if a liquefied natural gas terminal gets built on the bay's north spit, the pollution generated would seriously affect the health of the region. Joining us this morning from Coos Bay is anti-LNG activist Jody McCaffrey. Good morning, Jody. Thanks for being with us.
And good morning. Thanks for having me.
Jody, if you can talk a little bit about the situation. Apparently, the developer, the Jordan Cove Energy Project, hasn't gone into really any detail at all. I was going to say sufficient detail as far as being transparent about emissions and the terminal and the tanker. Apparently there's going to be literally tons of pollution would enter the air every year, even with the facility running at 75% capacity. Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, yes. They did do a resource report, Resource Report 9, that they submitted to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. But when the draft environmental impact statement was released this last fall, it was noted in comments that they calculated their pollution from their ship transits is only 2 hours. And everywhere else in their documents, they've been saying it's at least 90 minutes for each to come into the harbor and out. So they deliberately undercalculated the pollution impacts just from the transit times, plus the ships. They didn't count any of the time that the ships are sitting docked, which now they are admitting that the ships actually will be running. Each visit to the harbor will be 24 hours of ship pollution instead of just two. So that in itself is going to be a tremendous increase. They were just under meeting the guidelines for the clean air on some of their pollution particles, such as NOx. And, you know, I'm no pollution expert. A local doctor has raised issues about some of these particles because this facility is less than a mile from our city, and these are minute particles that actually lodge in the lungs, and you cannot get rid of them. And you're talking tons and tons of these particles being released into the air from the ships and the facility.
So, all in all, this is something, though, that you can use, again, as leverage, perhaps, to counter the efforts to site this thing in Coos Bay.
Yes, it is. Actually, some of the proposals that were in California that were like 14 miles offshore. One of the big drawbacks to those was the pollution impacts.
And that's 14 miles offshore, and you're talking about something that's a mile from town.
Yes, and actually the proposal down there would have been Ventura County's largest polluter had that facility gone through, 14 miles offshore. So you can imagine the pollution impact bringing these in to a harbor right near a populated area, which is what the proposal down here on the south coast of Oregon is going to be.
There are so many things that are wrong with it. Thank you so much. That was, of course, Jody McCaffrey from Coos Bay talking with us this morning. Good. Thank you so much, Jody.
And now some national news. Ex-Bush administration lawyers who crafted the legal framework for waterboarding and other interrogation tactics may be in a little legal trouble themselves. At least three former top Bush lawyers face possible disciplinary action from state bar associations for what a former Justice Department official has called deeply flawed and sloppily reasoned legal analysis.
In San Diego, as many as 200 people have protested a speech by former President Bill Clinton. It became a boycott at a hotel that became a boycott target when its owner donated money to pass the gay marriage ban in California. Gay rights and union leaders rallied outside the Manchester Grand Hyatt yesterday to oppose owner Doug Manchester's donation of $125,000 to last year's Proposition 8 campaign and also to demand improved working conditions at the hotel. This is an interesting alliance between gay activists and union people.
A bill moving through the Arkansas state legislature would allow worshippers to bring concealed weapons into churches if the church has approved the policy. The bill's most active supporters insist that their primary concern is upholding the separation of church and state, and that the state does not have the constitutional right to prevent churches from setting their own rules.
And a state House committee endorsed a bill on Thursday that ties two proposed coal-fired power plants in southwest Kansas to proposals for promoting wind and other renewable energy sources.
A federal appeals court overturned a ruling requiring more extensive environmental reviews for mountaintop removal, a form of coal mining in Appalachia that blasts away whole peaks.
And now we go to KBOO's own Spencer Raymond with D.C. Dirt. Good morning, Spencer. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Chris.
Well, so there have been a few stumbles along the path. It's remarkable that Barack Obama, who is so meticulous and careful in every way with the everything leading up to the campaign, his whole political life has been based on acute attention to detail. And there was an article in the Washington Post from November 18th of 2008 in which the writer is suggesting that all of the Obama administration appointees were going to be very carefully and thoroughly vetted. Well, now we have the specter of Bill Richardson, of Tom Daschle, of a number of people who apparently made it through the vetting process, but then later were reeked over the coals. Are we being too? What do you think of the process, and what do you think went wrong?
Well, a lot of these appointments, I mean, you're right. Obama was meticulous in his planning, and he, of course, makes the decision on who is appointed, but he has a whole team of staffers vetting these people to make sure once they go to the committees, the various committees in the Senate, and hopefully to the floor of the Senate, that they get confirmed. I mean, a couple of them are shoo-ins. I mean, we saw Hillary Clinton get confirmed pretty easily for Secretary of State, Timothy Geithner at the Treasury. Robert Gates, he was appointed. He didn't need a reconfirmation from the Senate, but he's still on as Defense Secretary. And then Eric Holder and Peter Orszag, his Attorney General and heading up the Office of Management and Budget. These are names that we already know and that we've heard a lot of, and these are successful. But, I mean, you have to ask yourself, when Obama, picks Tom Daschle, I mean, true, he's a good guy and would have been totally qualified to be Health and Human Services chief, but where do we draw the line and say, well, did Obama staffers not vet him enough with the whole taxes thing, or is this just something that some people, there's things in their, skeletons, you can call them, in the closet that, the Obama team did not know about and that the Senate and the various committees don't like enough to where it's something that they would not get confirmed over.
Well, we'll see what happens going on from there. If, in my opinion, Eric Holder's past ought to have set up red flags. His connections with United Fruit and, you know, paramilitary forces in Central America would ought to have been enough to call his appointment into serious question. And some of these tax matters, to me, I think if we looked very carefully at Republican appointees in the past, we would have found a much similar, if not more severe, situation. Thank you very much, Spencer. That, of course, was KBOO Spencer Raymond joining us this morning, as he does every weekday morning on Air Cascadia. Thank you so much, Spencer.
Thank you, Chris.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Monday, February 16th, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Tammy Dean. KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, If You Love This Planet, Dr. Helen Caldicott talks to Jonathan Schell. The economic crisis, shortage of natural resources, spread of nuclear arms and global warming, and the decline of American influence abroad.
Thanks so much for listening. Have a good day.